Welcome to the last lab session of the Julia module. There has been a slight change of plan. Louise Lehner, who was going to live the next module, will actually be traveling next week. So I have asked Dustin to give the Monte Carlo simulation or data analysis statistics module as next module, and then Louise Lehner will come afterwards. And the fourth module remains Guy Vidal's module on tensor networks or spin change. I'll update the web pages. You seem unhappy, Gifre? spin change. Yeah, I just reassociated things wrongly. So what we're going to do today, I think the most useful for you is not for me to introduce additional concepts to Julia, but rather to ensure that you all have the basics down under your belt so that when the next module begins, you can all work independently and do things. So as topic, I want to do a bit of data processing, how to save files, how to load files, how to plot things, as described on the website. But we or you are going to work together on writing a project that does something in this direction. And the main topic of today's course would be for you to write a new project from scratch. And I hope you can do part of things independently, such as adding test cases, adding it to GitHub, creating the project, and so on. Now, if you actually work on a real project, there always comes the question that you need to actually save some data to disk to remember them or to load them back in. And the first impulse is probably just using print to write it to a file or read it back in. And I recommend against that because it's actually way too low level and tedious. And there are a few standard file formats that you can use, and there are corresponding Julia packages for that. So the first file format that I want to introduce is called CSV. Is the font large enough? Can you read that? CSV, that stands for comma separated values. So it's really easy to read. The whole thing is just each line of the file has comma separated values. There are multiple values. It's like a 2D thing. And for example, you can easily read it into Excel and read it there, or numbers on Apple, or I don't know what the respective Google product is called. If you put a CSV file onto your Google Drive, then you can probably just edit it in the web browser as well and add graphs and so on. So it's a rather common file format, quite useful, used in many cases. And there's this Julia package for that. The only problem is that you have really large files that go into the hundreds of megabytes or gigabytes, terabytes, and CSV files are a bit slow. Then other file formats are more useful. And there's another one I want to introduce here called HDF5. That's a hierarchical data format, fifth version. And in an HDF5 file, you can have different variables, different groups inside a file. It looks a bit like a file system. You can have directories, and the files in there are then data sets. And each data set is usually a multidimensional array of some type, real, integer, complex numbers, and so on. And it's quite commonly used. There's a library, HDF5, and you probably need to install that on your laptop if you want to use that. And there's also a Python interface for that. There's also, a Julia, and there's also a Python interface for that called H5Py, and it's commonly used. So if you were to run on Canada's largest supercomputer doing a super big calculation, and you tell them that you want to use CSV files, then their answer probably would be, well, before you run, come and talk to our experts. We want to talk to you about some more efficient file formats, and HDF5 is probably one of the file formats they're going to recommend as possible alternative. Now, this is all about structured data, essentially big arrays or spreadsheets that you can store. And the last file format I want to recommend is JSON, J-S-O-N. That's used in computer science, in particular when different web applications talk to each other. JSON is for unstructured data. For example, if I buy something at Amazon, then there would be a JSON record that says first name Eric, last name Schnetter, credit card number, whatever the number is, list of purchases, the SKUs of the purchases that I have, and so on. And this is the data that the computer, the JSON encoded data, what they would exchange. It's an ASCII format, you can read it. It's full of curly braces and commas and quotation marks. So it's human readable, but it's a bit tedious to edit. So you want to read it, but probably not write it directly. And there exist bindings for basically every language. And that's kind of an interoperating format. Doesn't matter whether you use Julia or Python, C, or whatever other language to talk to each other. And as project today, I want to suggest something. Well, this is Julia, so we're going to use arrays. So probably JSON is not a good file format. So we are going to use either HDF5 or CSV. if I'm using a supercomputer, I'm using HDF5. The disadvantage is there's an HDF5 library that needs to be installed. I don't know how to do that on the Windows. I'm sure the HDF5 website has instructions for doing so. And under Linux, it's probably apt-get install HDF5. And under Mac, I don't know how to install it there either. There's also something. So in the beginning, why don't we use CSV files? And later on, during the afternoon, if you get adventurous, you can switch to HDF5. I have to admit, I intentionally did not look at the details of how to use the CSV package. So we're going to discover that together during this afternoon, how to write CSV files and how to store and load data. And the project I want to propose is that we write a particular Julia project. And there's going to be one function that creates a data set. I'm thinking a 2D array, some kind of standing wave or something in there. And there is another function to write a data set to disk, a third function to read a data set from disk back into, and then a fourth function to do some plotting. And this then corresponds to workflow. Well, creating the data set is trivial, but this is something that you will probably need in the other courses as well, independent of what kind of simulations you do. And the plotting, inter-ASCII plotting is one thing, but if you want to produce plots for a paper, then it doesn't make sense for the plot to appear on the screen. You need to produce it as PDF file or PNG file that you could probably upload to Twitter as well, and things like that. So that's the general idea for this afternoon. So let's begin. I have my Julia window open here, and let's begin with creating a project for the project of this afternoon. So I'm starting my Julia executable and create a project. Generate, now I need a name, that's always the most difficult thing to do. I don't know. Data and plotting, who knows what. Then CD into this directory and activate it. And then let me go to my editor here. The file has been created. And let's go into source directory, open this. I know I need to increase the screen size. Is large enough? Can you read that? And I'm now going to write some code that fills a 2D array with some standing wave. And if you want, you can work along or you can do that yourself. So 2D array, I don't know what array size I should choose. I'm just going to define some constants. Constant I equals 30, constant j equals 20. So it's going to be a 30 by 20 array. And then I have a function. Call it initialize. And it's going to allocate some array. What do we call the array? Let's call it RRR for array equals. How do I create an array? It's probably array float 64. What's next? Now let's fill it with zeros. That's the easiest, right? And I, comma, nj. Yeah. Let me also do the create a file for testing things. I'm creating a test directory. In the test directory, run tests.jl using data and plotting. Making that larger. Just going to type test here to see whether it works. Yeah, my computer is slow again. I'm beginning to blame the Solstice client that projects it on the screen because I have no evidence for that. So what we did so far is that clear to everybody, your questions, you can all follow along. If you're already familiar with Julia, you might find that a bit boring. And in that case, you're of course welcome to help others. You're also welcome to, walk around and ask others for help or to work on a different project if you want. Then we have an array. Then we want to put a standing wave in there. So we need some kind of wave number parameters. Okay, this, let's call this grid size setup standing wave. I'm just adding comments to the code. Wave parameters const ki equals 3, const kj equals 3. Kind of the wave numbers in the x and y directions. And then I'm going to have a loop here that loops over the array and puts some kind of sine wave into the array. For I in 1, but you should start with j, right? Sine of k 2 pi times ki times x times sine 2 pi times kj times y. Looks good so far. Some of you are awfully quiet. Quiet people, can you ask a question, please? Okay, I'm going to push this to GitHub very soon, of course, and then you can also look at the repository. And you can cheat by copying my code. So we need to define x and y. So x equals, so I want x equals to be 0 at the left end of the domain and 1 at the right hand of the domain. So that's a bit complicated. I type backslash pi. And then I hit the tab key. And if that doesn't work, then you can just type pi like this. And that's then, I mean, it's spelled out and that works as well. It depends on what editor you're using. If it has a Julia mode, it probably has this LaTeX syntax built in. But you don't have to use it if you don't want. So if I is 1, I want x to be 0. I ranges from 1 to an I. X ranges from 0 to 1. So if I is 0, sorry, if I is 1, x should be 0. Let's just calculate I minus 1. And then I minus 1 ranges from, well, let's just write it out. I minus 1 ranges from 0 to n I minus 1. X should range from 0 to 1. So we need to divide by n I minus 1. And that gives us the x coordinate. A bit of arithmetic. And we can also calculate y, because y is calculated j minus 1 to nj minus 1. And if I, as I see this code here, I kind of realize this conversion from I to x and j to y, it's a bit non-trivial. I mean, if I kind of went through it in a minute or so. But actually is non-trivial to get this right, right? Is this I minus, is this minus 1 here in the parentheses, or should that go outside at the end or something? And you're probably going to need it in other places of the code as well. So what do you suggest we should do? If there only was a way to extract a pattern of code and make it usable in other places? A structure? Okay, that would, yes, that could run by. Another idea. I was going to define a function that does that. We can do a function with a structure. That's probably how I would do it in my code. But here I'm going to use just the function because that is probably easier to implement. So I'll define a function index to coordinate. If only I could type. And it takes this input I and ni. And well, I don't need a function keyword, and it's I minus 1 divided by ni minus 1. I add these comments up here. J, nj, and then it looks a bit simpler. Now I see not only quiet faces, but also puzzled faces. That means I'm going too fast here. So let me reiterate, today we are going very slowly to a Julia project to make sure that you're familiar and comfortable with writing Julia code on your own or copying it from the blackboard as it may be. So don't hesitate to ask questions. I want to walk through the rows and make sure everything works later on. You're still not saying anything. There's still something wrong here. Let me just test the syntax by calling test again. No syntax errors. That's good. So this is my test/run test. It doesn't do anything. It just is using. That means it's loaded and compiled and look for syntax errors. Yes? How I do it with what?
How you define index to chord on NIV.
Yes.
So when I did that, it told me it had an unexpected.
Oh, do you have function in front of it? So there are two ways of defining a function. If you use the function keyword, then you need to have an end keyword and no equal signs. And kind of the shorter syntax is without the function keyword and without end, but then you need an equal signs like a definition. Actually, the next step, I was going to make this index to chord a bit better because currently there's no error checking in there. What if I is too small or is larger than NI? That should be an error. What if NI is not at least 2? If NI is 1, you have a division by 0. And if NI is 0, then everything is negative. Doesn't make sense at all. So we can add some safety test there. I'm just going to do that. So I'm going to switch to this other function syntax. I'm going to write function. This goes in a line of its own. You have an end keyword here. And now you can easily add more statements here. And for quick and dirty checks, I like to use the assert statement. Add assert 1 less than equals I less than equals NI. This checks both conditions at once. And actually, before I compare to NI, I should check that. Come as if NI is larger than 1. Oh, thank you. Okay, I'm going to type test again. And I'm just looking for syntax errors here. I don't actually output anything yet. Actually, I could. I could go to my test file here and write just add show initialize. This should call initialize and then tell me what's missing. Oh yes, I need to export initialize. Thank you. And now I should see this array, 30 by 20 elements, initializes nothing. What? No, I don't need to export that because I'm not calling it directly. Yes, but initialize is already in the module, so it can already see everything in the module. Only things that are called from the outside need to be. And I'm purposefully hiding index to chord and NINJ, KIKJ, because these are details that I don't want to make visible to the outside, only that. What I forgot was actually to return that array. What it currently did was return the result of a for loop, and then the for statement doesn't really do something, so the result was nothing. So I call it again, and I should finally, yes, see my array here. Who knows what? There's a semicolon here and a small number there. Very good. So the function is probably 0 near the boundary, which I want what I want it to be. Okay. Next, I'm going to create a repository and put all my files on the GitHub for you to look at, and because that's always a good idea. Sometimes I begin by creating a repository right at the beginning. Right now I have something that works, so it's definitely time to put things onto GitHub. I'm going to my GitHub repository, then there's a plus button here, new repository, Ishnet, what did I call it? Data and plotting. And I use .jl at the end of a name if it's a Julia repository. I'll make it public, description, sample, project, for handling data and what creating plots at gitignore. Sure, I wanted Julia. Oh man, Julia gitignore add license. I like the Apache license recently. Why don't I add a README either? Going to clone that repository. Now, I should also activate Travis and so on. I'm not going to do that now. I showed that to you last time. If you're interested, we can work on that again later. I can repeat it again so that you remember how to do that. What I want to do now, I want to use the CSV module, the CSV project module library, to actually write the file, the disk, the output, the disk, and then we can do something with it. Yes. So it's data and plotting.jl. All my Julia packages, I use .jl at the end. That's customary in Julia, and then ishnet. So now I'm going to add the CSV package. This is a thing that I did not test at all. So if things go wrong now, they might. Oof, look at the list of dependencies. Amazing. These are the other packages upon which CSV depends. And apparently there's about 50 other packages. There's ordered collections, the JSON package, iterator interface extensions, I have no idea. Data frames, data streams, data structure. Nice. libgit2, I don't know, maybe there's a Git interface, something about distributed computing. That's amazing. I have no idea, but sure. Sure. Let me add using ZSV here. And write data to file function So let's see what happens. Everything is fine. What? It lost my changes. CSV, inconvenient. Let me do it again. So I added the CSV package as the dependency to my package. I said using CSV at the beginning of the module, and I wrote this dummy function write. And now my laptop is thinking, which gives me time to attend to you. Yes, the main file. I usually put the using declarations right below the module. So it's module, data, and plotting, and then using CSV.
Oh, using CSV is not in the run test?
No, it's not there. I'm not using it yet, but I've just added it there. Okay. In the meantime, let me actually look at the CSV package. I need to find out how to actually use it. It did something here. Yes, it did plot it. Very good, very good. All is fine. Sorry, it did the same thing as before, because I didn't change the tests. So let me look at the examples for CSV to find out how to do that. There is no tutorial. Oh, I like that. There are test cases. Maybe I see something interesting in here. Right, sounds good. Pardon? There was a button for documentation. We're here. There you go. Thank you. Let me go there. Make that a bit larger. CSV file. How do you write something? This is for reading, right? There's a data file, and it goes into data frames. Here, CSV write. Oh, okay. Wow. I need to create a table. I did not expect that. Yeah, that's different with HDF5. How do I get a table? I need to use data frames. But let's look at tables.jl. Yeah, I did not expect that. Aha. Yeah, it seems that CSV uses a slightly different user interface than I assume. It's like a spreadsheet. You have different columns with different headers where you can put data in. It's very convenient if you have something like an Excel spreadsheet. That's not quite what we have. We have a 2D data set. So I was a bit naive in assuming that CSV would have an easy interface for that. So this is why I originally intended to use the HDF5 file format for that. So let me undo that. RMCSV. Add HDF5. And then let me look at how it works in HDF5. And this is how, as an example, you write something into an HDF5 file. First, the line here, A equals, can you read that? Let's make it a bit larger. Create some kind of array. We have a function over that. And then you call H5, right? You provide a file name. You provide a data set name within that file, and then the array, which is then written to the file, which is exactly what we want in our case. So. Let's test that again. We're still not calling the write function.
HDF5.
There's also HDFS, which is a different thing, which is a file system that's used in data science.
I know, I mean, that's
at the top.
H5.
This is H5, right? Is that too small?
I
can make it larger.
It's fine. It could have been an S. I also wrote that script.
Sorry, what is the input data? So what is that for?
Pardon, what?
What is the input data for?
Oh. In an HDF5 file, you have not just one data set, but you have multiple data sets. And it actually has a hierarchical structure with path names and so on. So each data set needs to have a name. And if you look into an HDF5 file, it remembers also metadata. So it remembers the names of the data sets, the data type, in this case, float64. It remembers it's a 2D array, the size of the array, and there are other advanced features. You can compress the data and chunk it and so on. It's really important if you have large data sets for efficiency. Here, we don't care about any of these. And you can store multiple things in the same data set, which is quite convenient. For example, if you, I don't know, you have a hydrodynamic simulation, you have the velocity, there's the X and the Y component, they should go in the same file below because they belong together. So let's test that. Oh no. Oh, I shouldn't call it write. Haha. Call it output. There's already a function called write in the standard library, and so I shouldn't call it write. So I named my function to output. And there's a command, h5ls, if you have the HDF5 library installed, which you can use to examine the content of the HDF5 file. And here it says there's one data set called data, but that's the name I gave here. And it is a 20 by 30 array. So HDF5 has the indices the wrong way around. So it's a 30 by 20 array, and HDF5 thinks it's 20 by 30 because it just uses the opposite convention for in which order you should. I mean, rows, columns, columns, rows, it just uses the opposite order. Okay. Now, what I did here earlier is that I said add HDF5 to add this HDF5 dependency. And then it properly, for you, tries to build the HDF5 library. And that might not work unless you have the HDF5 library installed. So let's do that. That might take another 10 minutes. Please let me know who is receiving an error message. Very good. Just a second. So apparently, if you're on Windows, then a good temporary directory would be temp, like this. On Mac OS, you leave out the E. So the HDF5 library and some of the other tools that are installed, they are not Julia packages. They're written in the language C or C++. So what happens is that behind the scenes, Julia actually downloads this package, makes sure you have a C compiler, makes sure you have additional tools, for example, CMake installed. Then it uses CMake to configure HDF5. It calls the C compiler to actually compile it. And this takes many, many minutes. This is why it's taking so long. So the fact that it actually works for most of you, is I find it quite amazing. This is the really difficult part and the really frustrating and boring part about my job at Perimeter. But I need to help people with this kind of thing. I want to continue and want to write a function that allows us to read in data. So we just use h5write to write it out. Actually, before we do that, let me just use git to commit the changes that I have so that they're in the repository.
So you now have a folder with temp array h5.
Pardon?
You now have a folder somewhere on your computer with temp array
h5. I have this file here on my computer. And I used h5ls to look into it. But I can't read it back in or plot it or anything. Implement writing HDF5 files, git push. And I'm going to write a new function that allows me to read data from a file. Let me look at the HDF5 documentation, how to do that best. Here's an example. Just latently going to copy that. Actually, let me leave that out. I want to read the whole array. Let's see how that works. I'm outputting the file. And I'm showing array 2. Let's see how that goes. Oh no, wow. What is this? Error detected. Unable to create data set. Aha, because the file already exists. Oof, oof, oof. How do I delete a file from Julia? That's probably a remove function. So what happens is that HDF5 detected that I already created the file last time I ran it, so it refuses to overwrite it. Quite nice, of course. Is there a function called rm? Yeah, there's a function called rm. I'm just going to call rm. Remove that file here. It's called test again. Yes, that works. And then instead of showing it, I can, what is it? The maximum of the absolute value of the new and the old array. And the result is, result is zero, so they're actually identical. And I'm going to turn that into a real test case. I add using test, and then add test is equal array 2, comma array add test. I need to add the module. I'm going to run it again, and the test passes. Let me just adjust the screen so that I want to make it easier for you to see what I have here. Okay, has there been progress for you installing the HDF5 library? Who is still waiting on the building HDF5? Everybody, that's just great. Yeah, these interactive sessions, they're more stressful than you think they are. Yes?
So HDF5 on my system finished installing like within 10 minutes, but is there a way I can make Julia talk to that HDF5? Because it somehow seems to be building.
Oh, yes. So the thing is, on Mac and Windows, Julia insists on installing its own libraries because that reduces dependencies. If something bad happens to the system, HDF5, Julia is independent. So in terms of safety, it's good. But in terms of going ahead, it's not so good. And I don't know why it takes so long. I mean, expected it to be shorter. Apologies for that.
Is there a hack where you just export some
path? Yes, the hack is you go to the hdf5.jl package. In the package, in the depths directory, there is a script that describes where it looks and the operating system specific dependencies. And for Linux, it probably says build it by yourself. And for macOS, it probably says use Homebrew to install it.
It should appear okay. Here, right?
Ah, no, it's in a different directory because it's in slash temp. It doesn't do it. If you remove the slash temp slash, then you see it there.
But it should be, it's in the home slash temp. It's not in this slash
temp. It's in a system partition. It's not even in your home directory. So maybe it was a bad idea to do that. Maybe I should just remove the temp and...
So if you don't put the temp,
then it is in the local the current directory, which would be the project directory. And you need to make sure you don't accidentally push it to GitHub, because it's probably too large for that. Okay. So it seems I confuse people by using this temp directory thing. So let's just, okay. File name equals array.h5, and then I'm using just remove file name, file input, file name, and I also should choose a data set name. That's the data set within the HDF5 file, and oh no, that's not here. Very good. And let's do that again. What? How did you do? Recursive force equals true. Yeah, so if you try to remove a file and the file doesn't exist, that's also an error. But if you're forced to remove a file and it doesn't exist, that's fine. It's a weird naming convention under Unix. So anyway. Okay. Can you show another GitHub feature, Git feature? There's a file .gitignore on your local disk, and all the files listed in there, all the file names, they will not be pushed to GitHub. And this data file, the HDF5 files, we don't want it in the repository because it's automatically generated and way too large. So we want to ignore it. So I'm writing star.h5 in here in this .gitignore file. That means all HDF5 files will be ignored when I use git add. And if I type git status now, then it doesn't list the array.h5 file anymore. Okay, let me count. Who is still building HDF5? 2, 4, 6, 8. Yeah, this does not go as planned. Okay, I think what we should do is we should take a shortcut. After class, you're going to install HDF5, but at the moment, you can abort that. We are not going to write it and read it. Instead, we are concentrating on creating a plot. And we install the plotting package instead. Let's just add a particular plotting package, plots, I think it was called. And that should be faster, since you probably did that 2 weeks ago already.
So how do you abort this?
Control C, or just close the window, that should work as well. But Control C should abort it. And the CMake and so on should remain installed, but the HDF5 you'll have to redo from the beginning. And now instead, let's look at creating a plot and writing the plot actually into a file as well, instead of just putting onto the screen. Yeah, you can do that as well. You can try that. Of course, things could get confused, but you can keep it open. It might work.
Stuff.
Pardon?
To avoid pushing the file.
There's a file.gitignore, and when you create a Git repository, then GitHub will ask you whether it should create a .gitignore file. Okay. If you didn't do that, you can just create one yourself.
Yeah, no.
The file is called .gitignore in the main repository, and it's usually a hidden file. You have to know where to look for it. And I just added the last file, star.h5, in there. Yes? Okay, good. We have a wave. Of course, the sine wave that we have is not moving. It's not anything fancy like that. It's like a single still image of that, that I want to write into a file. This is the documentation of Julia. Let me make the webpage larger again. If you go to juliaplots.org or you look for plots.jl, then you can find this webpage. And what I want to demonstrate now is how to use documentation or examples or other things to write some Julia code to make this happen. So I looked for plots.jl, which is the generic plots package. That's the one I added. And then it pointed me to docs.juliaplot.org. So I went there, and this is the page I'm landing here. It tells me anything about how to do plots in Julia. And there's a nice advertisement, simple is beautiful. Sure, agree with that. And then this plot here, well, I'm pointing at the screen, a single image of this one here looks approximately like what I had in mind. So now I want to recreate that. And luckily, this documentation page comes with some code ahead of it. This code is a bit large. So I want to take that and pare it a bit down, maybe without that add gif macro. Do you see the add gif here? Oh, I can't point to it. This add gif macro up there probably makes a movie out of it. Quite nice. I don't care for that at the moment because we have a single snapshot. So I want to take some of the code there and then create a single plot that looks nice and write it into a file. Maybe a PDF file that I can import into LaTeX later on. So let me rearrange my windows here. Maybe I want to make that a bit smaller. I can look at it while I'm coding here. Apparently I need using plots. Sorry, where is it? Make some waves. Yeah, this is the example. Can you all see that example? I don't want to make it any smaller. Progress meter doesn't look like something I need. I don't want a progress meter while I output something. I just want to plot something. So apparently I just need to use using plots, which I have here. And then I'm going to create a function that does the plotting that I want. Create a beautiful plot. Function plot export plot. What do we need? We need define x and I. Let me ignore the pyplot command. I don't know what it does, so I'm just leaving it out. Let's see what something breaks. X and y probably sets up coordinates, so I need to set up coordinates here. Let me do that. X equals range. Oof, what is this? 0, stop equals 1. I have no idea. Length equals ni. Could be right, right?
I think the function plot already exists.
No, I don't want to do that. Call it make plot. Thank you. Good catch. And then they have a function called zs, which contains the data to plot. We call it arr. That's input here. So not going to do anything here. N equals 100. That's probably the number of iterations for the movie. I'm going to ignore that as well. Progress meter, I don't care. For I equals range, yada, 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 yada. That's a sine wave here. We have that stored in an array. Create a plot with three subplots. We don't want three subplots. We only want a single plot. So let's try this. P equals plot x comma y comma array. St equals surface. This. Now I think I want this plot command here, right? Well, let me just run that and see what happens. Oh, the test does the writing and reading. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to comment that out. Going to call it like this. What's happening now? Oh. I pressed Control C. Let's call test again. And then let's see whether the lines I wrote there do something or whether I get some kind of, does not have UUIDs in its dependencies. Oof. Oh, wow. Stop. Oh. Okay, it asked me to type resolve. Let's do that. Why not? It's not done yet. Okay, stop. Okay, now it crashed my whole Julia. Sure, why not? Let me start it again. What now? Oh, this is not nice. What is wrong now? Wow! No! Okay. Okay. Maybe I shouldn't have aborted that command there. I'm going to delete the manifest file. That doesn't seem important. It's auto-generated. Let's see what happens. I don't want to delete the project file because that contains important information, right? The name of the project, the version number, the dependencies, and so on. But the other one, who knows? I'll type update. Let's see what happens. And look, there's a manifest file. It was regenerated. There you go. All is fine. And let's type test now to see what happens. Okay. Yeah, I shouldn't have aborted that thing earlier. Or rather, it shouldn't have crashed that badly when I aborted. Still slow, though. Okay, I'm advertising Julia here as a fast language, faster than Python. And everything I show is slow. This is... The user interface of Julia is slow, but if you actually write functions and for loops and everything, that is faster than Python. It's one of the main selling points of Julia. That you have to believe me, we haven't actually run the benchmarks. No, again, what is this? Eval for module plots to data plotting. Sys is Linux. Incremental compilation may be broken for this module. Oof. Oh, maybe it's pre-compiling. Okay. No, these are just warnings during pre-compiling. You can ignore them.
Using plots.
Yes, I have a using plots in the main module below the using HDF5. Now, if you follow along, you would not be having the using HDF5 and all the calls to HDF5, the output function, the input function, you would comment them out or leave them out. But the plot thing, you can still do that. And the adventures here with pre-compiling, these are error messages now. Like surface. Okay, so the thing that I so brutally typed here, maybe that doesn't work so well. So we need to fix that somehow. So let me then try to do it interactively instead of in a code. Let me create an array. A 30 by 20 array, and then I type using plots. It recompiles, of course it does. And then I want interactively to do a surface plot. So maybe looking at example didn't work. Let me just Google for Julia surface plot. Can't read that, I'll increase the font size. 3D surface plots, examples in Plotly, okay. Maybe that's a better idea. That looks nice. I'm going to steal that code here. Is this Julia or what language is this here? This is Julia, right? So I should be using Plotly instead. Okay, I can do that. Something's not, the indentation here looks all off. I don't like that. Now it's catching on. Two closing braces. I don't understand it. Oh, the missing quote here. Yes, now it looks much better. I'm using a package called Plotly, not plots. So I remove plots. I add Plotly. Oh, we should have a file name here as well. Okay. We're adding a file name. Plot name. What would be a good plot name? What did they use here? Just that plot. Okay. See what happens. So as you see, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm just copying things from example to make something happen. And if you're learning a new language, this is actually the usual way of doing, right? You will always be exploring some new packages, doing something new. There will always be something at the fringe of your knowledge when you program. And the idea is to not be afraid of it. And this is also why I intentionally didn't look up how to do this with Plotly. I mean, I have IPython notebooks. Obviously, where I plotted something, I could have just copied the code from there and then shown it to you and told you, see, this is how you plot. But I think there's also something valuable in the learning experience of actually seeing how it works, and that most of the time it doesn't work, and there's nothing wrong with it. If it doesn't work, you try something else. And if the whole Julia thing crashes, then, well, that things happen. Pardon? Oh, thank you. Yes, oh, that will not work. Thank you. I want more comments like that. Could not import base but quit into atom shortcut. Okay, I changed the code. Let me do it again. Invalid string syntax, that was the quotes. Why does it always take so long? Come on, it just resolved the package versions. Okay, there's something fishy about the example here. I don't know how many open and closing braces there should be. Let me add one more, maybe that helps. I think the example on the web is inconsistent. It has two opening and three closing brackets or so. So I'm just randomly trying to see whether that helps. Again, this is not good. Okay, this looks like Julia code. Do you think this is something else?
So, Flatly is also a paid service where you can log into your browser.
Okay, yes.
Some of the things which, the examples especially is related to that.
Good. Let's go to a different page then. That's a good question. So the plot on the right is exactly the one I want to see. Oh, mshow, I remember, yes, that we need pyplot. Okay, add pyplot. Sure, we can do that. Pyplot takes a long time to install, if I remember correctly, but we're used to that. Oh, it's already done. And I'm plotly. Goodbye, plotly. And then we just use imshow, like image show array. Let's see what happens here. Test.
Add.
Yes?
Add pyplot.
Did I forget to add it? I think I added it up here. I'm typing so fast because I got excited because now it's just a single command I have to type. And yes, so what I used previously in an IPython notebook was actually pyplot and was actually the command imshow. Imshow is an image show. You pass in a 2D array. It translates it into a nice image. And yeah, okay, now it's doing some installing thing. Okay. So matplotlib is a famous Python library for plotting things. And I mentioned the pyplot package last Wednesday that you can use to call arbitrary Python packages. And there's this pyplot Julia package that just uses this interface to call matplotlib and all the features that matplotlib in Python offers. Okay, I thought I had done that before. Okay, everything passed, but where's the image? The image is not here. Okay.
I did.
Okay, there's another thing here. Using plots and then pyplot. Let's do that maybe, okay? Add plots. Plots. And heat map.
You don't need show in the test file.
Pardon?
In the test file, you don't need show.
That's a good point. Okay, let me just run it, and then I probably need to give imshow or heatmap additional options, or I need to do something additional to actually capture the current image and write it to a file. I still need to figure out how to do that.
I think it's a lot of same thing.
Pardon?
Maybe same thing.
Oh, that could be, yes. Let's read. Oh, look, there's a color scheme, magma. I like Viridis better, so I'm going to use that one. And clim, I remember now, that is the color bar limit. So these are the limits, kind of the value 0 is the lowest, and then 0.3 is the highest value in the color bar. So for us, clim should be -1 and +1. because that's what we choose in our amplitude. And let's see whether it works. Of course, we don't see anything yet, right? This is just me getting excited about things using ImShow, color bar. Okay. Julia plots save figure. Let's see what comes up here. Output, haha, nice. Save fig, yes, there you go. It's probably called save fig in Python. And they probably chose the same thing. Here's save fig. Save the most recent figure SFN. Haha, file name. Look, it's so easy. You know what you're doing. It's not running yet, right? Another error, no. Hey, PyCall not found. Let's just add a build plots. Maybe that helps. Test. And then don't forget to install that HDR5 library. You're probably going to need it in some of the other modules. It's inconvenient that it apparently takes half an hour to install, but it's a worthwhile package. Mm. Ooh. With PNG, you save it as a PNG. PNG, I think that's one of the formats that Twitter accepts. So then, when you have the file, you can drop it onto your Twitter account and tweet about the, better don't tweet about today's experience. Okay, I hope that, another load error. Package PyCal not found. I shouldn't have to do that, but why not? Okay, there was a lowercase c, sorry. And let's do it again. Okay, if that doesn't work, I'm going to try it interactively. It's just a few commands. And if I make it work interactively, then at least I have the figure, I know how it works, and then I can put it into the code. Mm.
Could you try connecting out the PyPlot option to the makeplot thing? Because I do not require that.
Okay, maybe. I'll try that next. That's a good idea. So the Julia plots package has several backends. One of the backends is PyPlot, another backend is Plotly, and the third backend is GR. And GR is the one it chooses by default on macOS. And I hope that things like heatmap and savefig are implemented by all the backends. They should be. So let's remove the PyPlot and see whether it works now. And I'm sure that the details, how the pixels are arranged, look slightly different in all the backends, but I'm not really worried about that. Mm. Oh, look, here it says GR backend. That's the one I want. Very good. Mm. Let me change the file name to wave.png, probably a better one. What is, oh no, it shows up, very good. But it vanished again without doing anything. Oh no, maybe it's visible here, ls, you said in the test directory, array.plot.png, oh ho ho ho. Yes, yes, look. That is a standing wave. And it finally worked. Okay, we probably spent the last 90 minutes installing HDR5 and other things, but that's the thing. And this is what I wanted to get to, because this, of course, is obviously way too pixelated, and then it doesn't look good. So what we can do now is we can increase the resolution and run it again. And I was going to show you something about how the performance looks of writing and reading looks better in HDF5 than CSV. Of course, I can't do that, but let's just increase the grid size here and run it again. And then see what happens. Apparently, it wants to do that every time. Okay. Probably happens again is that the GR window will briefly pop up and vanish again. Of course, all that we are actually interested in doing is plotting it and writing into a file. There is no point in it displaying it for 10 milliseconds on the screen. I'm sure there's an option that we can give where we say suppress the display on the screen and then write it to files immediately and so on. I haven't done that yet. And if you run it on a supercomputer and output 100 images, then it would be worthwhile to do that. There's no point on the screen flickering 100 times doing something. It just makes things going slow.
Sorry, but shouldn't that just work with putting a semicolon behind the plot?
That only works in the REPL here. If you actually write Julia code, then the semicolon at the end of a line has no special meaning. That's just something of a feature of the interactive shell. And now, much nicer. And now I want to go crazy, right? Because why not? Let's do it again. And let's see what happens.
How to switch between the shell and Jumia?
Pardon?
How to switch between the shell and the Jumia?
There's a semicolon. So you know the package manager mode is the closing square bracket. And you can get out again. And if you press semicolon, then it switches into shell mode. And the shell mode on Unix and Windows, it works differently. So on Unix, you have commands like ls. On Mac OS, you have a command open that looks at the file type and displays the file nicely graphically. Under Linux, that probably doesn't work. You have to do a different way to open the file. And I don't know how to do that under Windows, but it's in dill instead of ls and so on. It's slightly different depending on the operating system. Now that I get this warning here, you can't read it, the font is too small. The document wave.png has been changed. If I click OK, it will reload it, and that's now the new version. It looks exactly the same, because 3,000 by 2,000 pixels, of course, is way too fine. You don't see the difference anymore. Very good. Okay, let me briefly undo some of the changes here, and then save what I have, git status. I have these PNG files. I also don't want them into Git. So I'm going to back to git ignore and add PNG files here as well. If I then type git status, they don't show up anymore. Plotting output. Git push. And now if we go to, where was it? The repository that I created here, then you see, if you look at the individual commits, you see the progression that we made during today's lecture. And the final thing, the final version is also the version that should work for you and should create such an output. And I apologize for the detour regarding CSV. That was my mistake, but the plotting in Julia that worked about, apart from that slowness, worked about as well as I expected with lots of trial and error before something worked. And in the end, a colleague had a nice idea and everything was just fine. So that's how it usually works. But do you have questions?
Can you show the source code once?
Yes.
Here's the final version.
This is the final version for plotting. There's the using plots in the beginning. Plots is the basic Julia plotting package with the different backends. It's the recommended way of plotting. It's good that that way actually worked. And then the two commands are heat map to create a heat map that creates this nice color scheme. Clim is the color map limit. -1 and +1 are the maximum and minimum values that we wrote in the field, corresponding to the amplitude of the sine waves. And the color map we read is, I like this color map. It's better than the default color map in certain respect. There's a blog entry written on that somewhere. And apparently, savefig writes a figure. It looks at the file name to find out what format it should have. And there are, of course, 20 or 50 or 100 other options that we can all look at. But finding out that the command I wanted to call is called heatmap, that is what took me most of the time. And I went on 2 or 3 different dead ends here. If you intend to hand in a project, if you want to take the course for credit, for example, then I suggest the deadline 2 weeks from now. And the project, as I probably described earlier, should be a well-written open source package. It should do some interesting calculation, maybe a bit more interesting than just putting a standing wave in there, but not much more interesting. But what I didn't do today is, for example, you want to have automated testing via Travis or Aware, and you want to have a nicely written README. If you're doing something with data or with graphics, then having a nice figure in the README as well would also be nice. There could be a tutorial, comments in the source code, etc. Obviously, I'm available for you for office hours. Stop by my office, send me an email if you have questions about this. And otherwise, if you want to take it for credit, you can stay now after class and we can briefly discuss the projects that you have in mind. Do you have questions regarding plotting, regarding today's class? Oh, yes.
Can you just quickly show the test file again?
Oh, yes. That's the test file. The part above the cursor is where I write and read, and the part at the bottom is where I output something. So I call the initialize function to get an array, and then just call the makeplot with the file name of wave.png. And the output is generated in the test directory.